Style glanced at them disappointedly, probably because she wanted to work with Nick. They were each supposed to find a partner and write a story together outside of class, trading paragraphs back and forth. The point of the exercise, Professor Piper said, was to make them extra conscious of plot and voice, and to lead their brains down pathways they'd never find on their own. Nick wanted to meet on campus at Love Library. That was the actual name. Thank you for your donation, Mayor Don Lathrop Love. Nick worked there a few nights a week, shelving books down in the stacks. Reagan looked suspicious when Kath started packing up her laptop after dinner. You're leaving the dorm after dark? Do you have a date? She said it like it was a joke. The idea of Kath on a date. I'm meeting someone to study. Don't walk home by yourself if it's late, Levi said. He and Reagan had class notes spread all over Reagan's side of the room. I walk home by myself all the time, Reagan snapped at him. That's different. Levi smiled at her warmly. You don't rock that Little Red Riding Hood vibe. You're scary. Reagan grinned like the big bad wolf. I don't think rapists actually care about self-confidence, Kath said. You don't? Levi looked over at her seriously. I think they'd go for easy prey. The young and the lame. Reagan snorted. Kath hung her scarf on her neck. I'm not lame, she mumbled. Levi heaved himself up off Reagan's bed and slid into a heavy green canvas jacket. Come on, he said.
Why?
I'm walking you to the library.
You don't have to, Kath argued.
I haven't moved in 2 hours. I don't mind.
No, really.
Just go, Kath, Reagan said. It'll take 5 minutes. And if you get raped now, it'll be our fault. I haven't got time for the pain. You coming? Levi asked Reagan. Fuck no, it's cold out.
It was cold out.
Kath walked as quickly as she could, but Levi, long as his legs were, never broke an amble. He was trying to talk to Kath about Buffalo. As far as she could tell, Levi had a whole class that was just about Buffalo. He seemed like he'd major in Buffalo if that were an option. Maybe it was an option. This school was constantly reminding Kath how rural Nebraska was, something she'd never given any thought to before, growing up in Omaha, the state's only real city. Kath had driven through Nebraska a few times on the way to Colorado. She'd seen the grass and the cornfields, but she'd never thought much past the view. She'd never thought about the people who lived there. Levi and Reagan were from some town called Arnold, which Reagan said smelled and looked like manure. God's country, Levi called it. All the gods. Brahma and Odin would love it there. Levi was still talking about Buffalo, even though they were already at the library. Kath climbed the first stone step, hopping up and down to stay warm. Standing on the step, she was practically as tall as him. Do you see what I mean? He asked. She nodded. Cows bad, buffalo good. Cows good, he said. Bison better. Then he gave her a lazy, lopsided grin. This is all really important, you know. That's why I'm telling you.
Vital, she said. Ecosystems, water tables, shrews going extinct.
Call me when you're done, Little Red.
No, Kath thought. I don't even know your number.
Levi was already walking away. I'll be in your room, he said over his shoulder. Call me there. The library had 6 levels above ground and 2 levels below. The sublevels, where the stacks were shaped strangely and accessible only from certain staircases. It almost felt like the stacks were tucked under other buildings around campus. Nick worked in the north stacks, in a long, white room. It was practically a missile silo, with bookshelves. There was a constant hum, no matter where you were standing, and even though Kath couldn't see any vents, parts of the room had their own wind. At the table where they were sitting, Nick had to set a pen on his open notebook to keep the pages from rifling. Nick wrote in longhand. Kath was trying to convince him that they'd be better off taking turns on her laptop. "But then we won't see ourselves switching," he said. "We won't see the two different hands at work."
"I can't think on paper," she said.
"Perfect," Nick said. "This exercise is about stepping outside of yourself."
"Okay," she sighed. There was no use arguing anymore. He'd already pushed her computer away.
"Okay." Nick picked up his pen and pulled the cap off with his teeth. "I'll start."
"Wait," Kath said. "Let's talk about what kind of story we're writing."
"You'll see."
"That's not fair." She leaned forward, looking at the blank sheet of paper. "I don't want to write about, like, dead bodies or naked bodies."
"So what I'm hearing is no bodies."
Nick wrote in a scrawling half-cursive. He was left-handed, so he smeared blue ink across the paper as he went. "You need a felt tip," Kath thought, trying to read his handwriting upside down from across the table. When he handed her the notebook, she could hardly read it, even right side up.
"What's this word?" she asked, pointing.
"Retinas."
She's standing in a parking lot, and she's standing under a streetlight, and her hair's so blonde it's flashing at you. It's burning out your retinas one fucking cone at a time. She leans forward and grabs your t-shirt, and she's standing on tiptoe now. She's reaching for you. She smells like black tea and American spirits, and when her mouth hits your ear, you wonder if she remembers your name.
"So," Kath said, "we're doing this in present tense?"
"Second person," Nick confirmed.
Kath frowned at him.
"What's wrong?" he asked. "You don't like love stories?"
Kath could feel herself blushing and tried to stop.
"Stay cool, little Red."
She hunched over her bag to look for a pen. It was hard for her to write without typing, and hard to write with Nick watching her like he'd just handed her a hot potato.
"Please don't tell Mom," she giggles.
"Which part should I leave out?" you ask her. "The hair or the stupid hipster cigarettes?"
She pulls meanly at your t-shirt, and you shove her back like she's 12. And she practically is. She's so young. And you're so tired. And what is Dave going to think if you walk out on your first date to take care of your stupid, stupidly blonde little sister?
"You suck, Nick," she says, and she's reeling. She's swaying again under the streetlight.
Kath turned the notebook around and pushed it back at Nick. He poked his tongue in his cheek and smiled.
"So, our narrator is gay," he said. "And he's named after me."
"I love love stories," Kath said.
Nick nodded his head a few more times, and then they both started laughing. It was almost like writing with Ren, back when she and Ren would sit in front of the computer, pulling the keyboard back and forth and reading out loud as the other person typed. Kath always wrote most of the dialogue. Ren was better at plot and mood. Sometimes Kath would write all the conversations, and Ren would write behind her, deciding where Baz and Simon were and where they were going. Once Kath had written what she thought was a love scene, and Ren had turned it into a sword fight. Even after they'd stopped writing together, Kath would still follow Ren around the house, begging for help whenever she couldn't get Simon and Baz to do anything but talk. Nick wasn't Ren. He was bossier and more of a showboat. And also, obviously, a boy. Up close, his eyes were bluer, and his eyebrows were practically sentient. He licked his lips when he wrote, tapping his tongue on his front teeth. To his credit, he got over the gay thing pretty much immediately, even when Kath gave gay fictional Nick heavy black eyebrows and periwinkle blue wingtips. Nonfiction Nick had trouble taking turns. He'd start to take the notebook out of Kath's hands before she was done writing, and her green pen would pull across the page.
"Wait," she'd say.
"No, I have an idea, and you're about to ruin it."
She tried hard to make her paragraphs sound like Nick's, but her own style kept leaking through. It was cool when she realized he was imitating her, too.
After a few hours, Kath was yawning, and their story was twice as long as it needed to be.
"This is going to take forever to type up," she said.
"Don't type it, then. We'll turn it in like this."
Kath looked down at the green and blue smudged pages. "It's our only copy."
"So don't let your dog eat it."
He zipped up a gray hoodie and reached for his ratty denim jacket.
"It's midnight. I have to clock out."
The book cart next to their table was still heaped with books.
"What about these?" Kath asked.
"The morning girl can do it. It'll remind her that she's alive."
Kath carefully tore their story out of Nick's notebook and tucked it into her backpack, then followed him up the winding staircase. They didn't see anyone else on their way to the first floor. It was different being with him now, different even from a few hours ago. Fun. Kath didn't feel like her real self was buried under 8 layers of fear and diagnosable anxiety. Nick walked right next to her on the stairs, and they talked like they were still passing the notebook between them. When they got outside, they stopped at the sidewalk. Kath felt some of her nervousness creeping back. She fumbled with the buttons of her coat.
"All right," Nick said, putting his arms through his backpack. "See you in class?"
"Yeah," Kath said. "I'll try not to lose our novel."
"Our first novel," he said, taking the path that led off campus. "Good night."
"Good night."
She watched him go, all dark hair and blue smudges in the moonlight. And then it was just Kath out on the quad, Kath and about 100 trees that she never noticed during the daytime. The library lights switched off behind her. Her shadow disappeared. Kath sighed and got out her phone. She had 2 texts from Abel. She ignored them, then dialed her room, hoping her roommate wasn't asleep.
"Hello?"
Reagan answered on the 3rd ring. There was music in the background. "It's Kath."
"Well, hello, Kath. How was your date?"
"It wasn't... Look, I'm just going to walk home. I'll be fast. I'm already walking."
"Levi left as soon as the phone rang. You may as well wait for him."
"He doesn't have to."
"It'll be a bigger hassle if he can't find you."
"Okay," Kath said, giving in. "Thanks, I guess."
Reagan hung up. Kath stood next to a lamppost so he'd see her and tried to look like the huntsman, not the little girl with the basket. Levi showed up long before she expected him to, jogging down the pathway. Even his jogging looked laid back. She started walking toward him, thinking she'd save him at least a few steps.
"Catherine," he said, stopping when they met and turning to walk with her. "In one piece, even."
"That," she said, "isn't even my name."
"Just Cather, huh?"
"Just Kath."
"Did you get lost in the library?"
"No."
"I always get lost in the library," he said, "no matter how many times I go. In fact, I think I get lost there more, the more that I go. Like it's getting to know me and revealing new passages."
"You spend a lot of time in the library?"
"I do, actually."
"How is that possible, when you're always in my room?"
"Where do you think I sleep?" he asked.
And when she looked at him, he was grinning.
Simon curled on his bed, like a wounded unicorn foal, holding the torn piece of green velvet to his tear-stained face.
"Are you okay?"
Basil asked. You could tell he didn't want to ask. You could tell he found it quite distasteful to speak to his long-time enemy.
"Leave me alone,"
Simon spat, choking on his tears, and hating Basil even more than usual.
"She was my mother."
Basil frowned. He narrowed his smoky gray eyes and folded his arms like he was forcing himself to keep standing there, like what he really wanted to do was throw another sneezing spell at Simon.
"I know,"
Basil said almost angrily. "I know what you're going through. I lost my mother, too." Simon wiped his snotty nose on the sleeve of his jacket and slowly sat up, his eyes as wide and blue as the 8th sea.
"Was Basil lying? That would be just like him, the prat."
From Friends for Life, and after. Posted August 2006. By fanfics.net authors Magicath and Renegade.
Chapter 6. Dad, call me. It's Kath again. Call me. Dad, stop ignoring my voicemail. Do you listen to your voicemail? Do you know how? Even if you don't, I know you can see my number in your missed calls. Call me back, okay? Dad, call me. Or call Ren. No, call me. I'm worried about you. I don't like worrying about you. Don't make me call the neighbors. They'll come check on you, and you don't speak any Spanish, and it'll be embarrassing. Dad?
Hey, Kath.
Dad, why haven't you called me? I left you a million messages.
You left me too many messages. You shouldn't be calling me or even thinking about me. You're in college now. Move on.
It's just school, Dad. It's not like we have irreconcilable differences.
Honey, I've watched a lot of 90210. The parents weren't even on the show once Brandon and Brenda went to college. This is your time. You're supposed to be going to frat parties and getting back together with Dylan.
Why does everybody want me to go to frat parties?
Who wants you to go to frat parties? I was just kidding. Don't hang out with frat guys, Kath. They're terrible. All they do is get drunk and watch 90210.
Dad, how are you?
I'm fine, honey.
Are you lonely?
Yes.
Are you eating?
Yes.
What are you eating?
Nutritious food.
What did you eat today? No lying.
Something ingenious I discovered at Quick Trip. It's a sausage wrapped in a pancake, then cooked to perfection on a hot dog roller.
Dad!
Come on, Kath. You told me not to lie.
Could you just go to the grocery store or something?
You know I hate the grocery store.
They sell fruit at Quick Trip.
They do?
Yes, ask somebody.
You know I hate to ask somebody's.
You're making me worry about you.
Don't worry about me, Kath. I'll look for the fruit.
That is such a lame concession.
Fine. I'll go to the grocery store.
No lying. Promise?
I promise.
I love you.
I love you, too. Tell your sister I love her. Kath, it's your dad. I know it's late and you're probably asleep. I hope you're asleep, but I had this idea. It's a great idea. Call me. Kath, it's your dad again. It's still late, but I couldn't wait to tell you this. You know how you guys want a bathroom upstairs? Your room is right over the bathroom. We could put in a trap door and a ladder. It would be like a secret shortcut to the bathroom. Isn't this a great idea? Call me. It's your dad. Kath! Not a ladder, a fireman's pole. You'd still have to use the stairs to get up to your room, but Kath, a fireman's pole. I think I can do this myself. I mean, I'll have to find a pole.
Dad, call me. Call me, okay? Dad, it's Kath. Call me. It was Friday night, and Kath had the dorm room to herself. She was trying to work on Carry On Simon, but her mind kept wandering. Today in class, Professor Piper had handed back the story that she and Nick wrote together. The professor had filled the margins with A's and drawn a little caricature of herself in the corner shouting, A! She had a few of the writing teams, the people who had done really well, read their stories out loud in class. Kath and Nick went last, trading paragraphs so they were always reading what the other person had written. They got tons of laughs, probably because Nick acted like he was doing Shakespeare in the Park. Kath's cheeks and neck were burning by the time they sat down. After class, Nick held up his pinky to her. When she stared at it, he said, "Come on, we're making an oath." She curled her finger around his and squeezed it.
"Partners, automatically, anytime we need one. Deal?"
His eyes were set so deep, it made everything he said more intense. "Deal," Kath said, looking away.
"God damn," Nick said, his hand already gone. We are so fucking good.
I don't think she has any A's left after our paper, Kath said, following him out of the room. People will be getting B pluses for the next 8 years because of us.
We should do this again.
He turned suddenly in the doorway. Kath hip-checked him before she could stop herself. We already swore an oath, she said, stepping back.
Not what I mean. Not for an assignment. We should do it just because it was good, you know?
It was good. It was the most fun Kath had had since... well, since she got here, for sure.
Yeah, she said. All right. I work Tuesday and Thursday nights, Nick said. You want to do this again Tuesday? Same time?
Sure, Kath said. She hadn't stopped thinking about it since then. She wondered what they'd write. She wanted to talk to Ren about it. Kath had tried calling Ren earlier, but she hadn't picked up. It was almost 11 now. Kath picked up the phone and hit Ren's number. Ren answered.
Yes, sister?
Hey, can you talk?
Yes, sister, Ren said, giggling.
Are you out?
I am on the 10th floor of Schramm Hall. This is where all the tourists come when they visit Schramm Hall. The observation deck. See the world from Tyler's room. That's what it says on the postcards.
Ren's voice was warm and liquid. Their dad always said that Ren and Kath had the same voice, but Ren was 33 RPM and Kath was 45. This was different. Are you drunk?
I was drunk, Ren said. Now I think I'm something else.
Are you alone? Where's Courtney?
She's here. I might be sitting on her leg.
Ren, are you okay?
Yes, sister. That's why I answered the phone, to tell you I'm okay, so you can leave me alone for a while. Okay?
Kath felt her face tense, more from hurt now than worry.
I was just calling to talk to you about Dad.
Kath wished she didn't use the word just so much. It was her passive-aggressive tell, like someone who twitched when they were lying. And other stuff. Boy stuff. Ren giggled.
Boy stuff? Is Simon coming out to Agatha again? Did Baz make him a vampire again? Are their fingers helplessly caught in each other's hair? Have you got to the part where Baz calls him Simon for the first time? Because that's always a tough one. That's always a 3-alarm fire.
Kath pulled the phone away so that it wasn't touching her ear.
Fuck off, she whispered. I just wanted to make sure you were okay.
Okay, Ren said, her voice an edgy sing-song. Then she hung up. Kath set the phone on her desk and leaned back away from it, like it was something that bites. Ren must be drunk. Or high. Ren never. Would never. She never teased Kath about Simon and Baz. Simon and Baz were... Kath got up to turn off the light. Her fingers felt cold. She kicked off her jeans and climbed into bed. Then she got up again to check that the door was locked and looked out the peephole into the empty hallway. She sat back on her bed. She stood back up. She opened her laptop, booted it up, closed it again. Ren must be high. Ren would never... She knew what Simon and Baz were, what they meant. Simon and Baz were... Kath lay back down in bed and shook out her wrists over the comforter, then twisted her hands and the hair at her temples until she could feel the pull. Simon and Baz were untouchable.
This isn't any fun today, Reagan said, staring glumly at the dining hall door. Reagan was always cranky on weekend mornings when she was around. She drank too much and slept too little. She hadn't washed off last night's makeup yet this morning, and she still smelled like sweat and cigarette smoke. Day-old Reagan, Kath thought. But Kath didn't worry about Reagan, not like she worried about Ren.
Maybe because Reagan looked like the big bad wolf, and Wren just looked like Kath with a better haircut. A girl walked through the door wearing a red Husker football sweatshirt and skinny jeans. Reagan sighed. "What's wrong?" Kath asked. "They all look alike on game days," Reagan said. "I can't see their ugly, deformed, true selves." She turned on Kath. "What are you doing today?"
"Hiding in our room."
"You look like you need some fresh air."
"Me?"
Kath gagged on her pot roast sandwich. "You look like you need fresh DNA.
"I look like this because I'm alive," Reagan said. "Because I've had experiences. Do you understand?"
Kath looked back up at Reagan and couldn't help but smile. Reagan wore eyeliner all the way around her eyes, like a hard-ass Kate Middleton. And even though she was bigger than most girls, big hips, big chest, wide shoulders, she carried herself like she was exactly the size everyone else wanted to be. And everyone else went along with it, including Levi and all the other guys who hung out in their room while Reagan finished getting ready.
"You don't get to look like this," Reagan said, pointing at her gray day-after face, "hiding in your room all weekend."
"So noted," Kath said.
"Let's do something today."
"Game day. The only smart thing to do is stay in our room and barricade the door."
"Do you have anything red?" Reagan asked. "If we put on some red, we could just walk around campus and get free drinks."
Kath's phone rang. She looked down at it. "Wren." She pushed ignore. "I have to write today," she said. When they got back to their room, Reagan took a shower and put on fresh makeup, sitting on her desk holding a mirror. She left and came back a few hours later with Target bags and a guy named Eric. Then she left again and didn't come back until the sun was setting, alone this time. Kath was still sitting at her desk.
"Enough!" Reagan half shouted.
"Jesus," Kath said, turning toward her. It took a few seconds for Kath's eyes to focus on something that wasn't a computer screen.
"Get dressed," Reagan said, "and don't argue with me. I'm not playing this game with you."
"What game?"
"You're a sad little hermit, and it creeps me out, so get dressed. We're going bowling."
Kath laughed. "Bowling?"
"Oh, right," Reagan said, "like bowling is more pathetic than everything else you do."
Kath pushed away from the desk. Her left leg had fallen asleep. She shook it out. "I've never been bowling. What should I wear?"
"You've never been bowling?" Reagan was incredulous. "Don't people bowl in Omaha?"
Kath shrugged. "Really old people? Maybe?"
"Wear whatever. Wear something that doesn't have Simon Snow on it, so that people won't assume your brain stopped developing when you were 7.
Kath put on her red carry-on t-shirt with jeans and redid her ponytail. Reagan frowned at her.
"Do you have to wear your hair like that? Is it some kind of Mormon thing?"
"I'm not Mormon."
"I said some kind."
There was a knock at the door, and Reagan opened it. Levi was standing there, practically bouncing. He was wearing a white t-shirt, and he'd drawn on it with a Sharpie, adding a collar and buttons down the front, plus a chest pocket with "The Strikeout King" written above it in fancy script.
"Are we doing this?"
he said. Reagan and Levi were excellent bowlers. Apparently there was a bowling alley in Arnold, not nearly as nice as this one, they said. The three of them were the only people under 40 bowling tonight, which didn't stop Levi from talking to absolutely every single person in the whole building. He talked to the guy who was spraying the shoes, the retired couples in the next lane, a whole group of moms in some league who sent him away with ruffled hair and a pitcher of beer. Reagan acted like she didn't notice.
"I think there's a baby in the corner you forgot to kiss," Kath said to him. "Where's a baby?"
His eyes perked up. "No," she said. "I was just. Levi set down the pitcher. He was balancing 3 glasses in his other hand. He let them drop on the table, and they landed without falling over.
"Why do you do that?"
"What?"
He poured a beer and held it out to her. She took it without thinking, then set it down with distaste. Go so far out of your way to be nice to people. He smiled, but he was already smiling, so that just meant that he smiled more.
Do you think I should be more like you?
He asked, then looked fondly over at Reagan, who was scowling, somehow voluptuously, over the ball return.
Or her?
Kath rolled her eyes. There's got to be a happy medium.
I'm happy, he said. So this must be it.
Kath bought herself a cherry Coke from the bar and ignored the beer. Reagan bought 2 plates of drippy orange nachos. Levi bought 3 giant dill pickles that were so sour they made them all cry. Reagan won the first game, then Levi won the second. Then, for the third, he talked the guy behind the counter into turning on the kitty bumpers for Kath. She still didn't pick up any strikes. Levi won again. Kath had just enough money left to buy them all ice cream sandwiches from the vending machine.
I really am the strikeout king, Levi said. Everything I write on my shirt comes true.
It'll definitely come true tonight at Muggsy's, Reagan said. Levi laughed and crumpled up his ice cream wrapper to throw at her. The way they smiled at each other made Kath look away. They were so easy together, like they knew each other inside and out. Reagan was sweeter and meaner with Levi than she ever was with Kath. Someone pulled on Kath's ponytail, and her chin jerked up.
You're coming with us, Levi asked, right?
Where?
Out, to Muggsy's. The night is young.
And so am I, Kath said. I can't get into a bar.
You'll be with us, he said. Nobody'll stop you.
He's right, Reagan said. Muggsy's is for college dropouts and hopeless alcoholics. Freshmen never try to sneak in. Reagan put a cigarette in her mouth, but didn't light it. Levi took it and put it between his lips. Kath almost said yes. Instead, she shook her head. When Kath got back to her room, she thought about calling Ren. She called her dad instead. He sounded tired, but he wasn't trying to replace the stairs with a water slide, so that was an improvement. And he'd eaten 2 healthy choice meals for dinner.
That sounds like a healthy choice, Kath told him, trying to sound encouraging.
She did some reading for class. Then she stayed up working on Carry On until her eyes burned, and she knew she'd fall asleep as soon as she climbed into bed.
Words are very powerful, Miss Possibelf said, stepping lightly between the rows of desks. And they take on more power the more that they're spoken. The more that they're said and read and written in specific, consistent combinations. She stopped in front of Simon's desk and tapped it with a short, jeweled staff. Up, up and away, she said clearly. Simon watched the floor move away from his feet. He grabbed at the edges of his desk, knocking over a pile of books and loose papers. Across the room, Basselton laughed. Miss Possibelf nudged Simon's trainer with her staff. Hold your horses! And his desk hovered 3 feet in the air. The key to casting a spell, she said, is tapping into that power, not just saying the words, but summoning their meaning. Now, she said, open your magic words books to page 4, and settle down there, Simon, please. From chapter 3, Simon Snow and the Mage's Heir, copyright 2001 by Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 7. When Kath saw Abel's name pop up on her phone, she thought at first that it was a text, even though the phone was obviously ringing. Abel never called her. They emailed, they texted, they'd texted just last night, but they never actually talked unless it was in person. Hello? She answered. She was waiting in her spot outside Andrews Hall, the English building. It was really too cold to be standing outside, but sometimes Nick would show up here before class, and they'd look over each other's assignments or talk about the story they were writing together.
It was turning into another love story. Nick was the one turning it that way.
Kath?
Abel's voice was gravelly and familiar. Hey, she said, feeling warm suddenly, surprisingly. Maybe she had missed Abel. She was still avoiding Wren. Kath hadn't even eaten lunch at Selleck since Wren drunked at her. Maybe Kath just missed home. Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, he said. I just told you last night that I was fine.
Well, yeah, I know. But it's different on the phone. He sounded startled.
That's exactly what Katie said.
Who's Katie?
Katie is the reason I'm calling you. She's like every reason I'm calling you.
Kath cocked her head. What?
Kath, I've met someone, he said.
Just like that. Like he was in some telenovela. Katie?
Yeah, and it's, she made me realize that, well, that what you and I have isn't real.
What do you mean?
I mean our relationship, Kath. It isn't real.
Why did he keep saying her name like that? Of course it's real, Abel. We've been together for 3 years.
Well, sort of.
Not sort of, Kath said.
Well, at any rate.
His voice sounded firm.
I met somebody else.
Kath turned to face the building and rested the top of her head against the bricks. Katie.
And it's more real, he said. We're just right together, you know? We can talk about everything. She's a coder, too, and she got a 34 on the ACT.
Kath got a 32. You're breaking up with me because I'm not smart enough?
This isn't a breakup. It's not like we're really together.
Is that what you told Katie?
I told her we'd drifted apart.
Yes, Kath spat out, because the only time you ever call is to break up with me. She kicked the bricks, then instantly regretted it.
Right, like you call me all the time.
I would if you wanted me to, she said.
Would you?
Kath kicked the wall again. Maybe. Abel sighed. He sounded more exasperated than anything else, more than sad or sorry.
We haven't really been together since junior year.
Kath wanted to argue with him, but she couldn't think of anything convincing. But you took me to the military ball, she thought. But you taught me how to drive. But your grandma always makes tres leches cake for my birthday.
She makes it anyway for the bakery.
Fine. Kath turned and leaned back against the wall. She wished she could cry, just so that he'd have to deal with it. So noted. Everything is noted. We're not broken up, but we're over.
We're not over, Abel said. We can still be friends. I'll still read your fic. Katie reads it, too. I mean, she always has. Isn't that a coincidence?
Kath shook her head, speechless. Then Nick rounded the corner of the building and acknowledged her the way he always did, looking her in the eye and quickly jerking up his head. Kath lifted her chin in answer. Yeah, she said into the phone. Coincidence. Nick had set his backpack on a stone planter, and he was digging through his books and notebooks. His jacket was unbuttoned, and when he leaned over like that, she could kind of see down his shirt, sort of, a few inches of pale skin and sparse black hair. I've got to go, she said.
Oh, Abel said. Okay, do you still want to hang out over Thanksgiving?
I've got to go, she said, and pressed end. Kath took a slow breath. She felt lightheaded and strained, like something too big was hatching inside her ribs. She pushed her shoulders back into the bricks and looked down at the top of Nick's head. He looked up at her and smiled crookedly, holding out a few sheets of paper.
Will you read this? I think maybe it sucks. Or maybe it's awesome. It's probably awesome. Tell me it's awesome, okay? Unless it sucks.
Kath texted Wren just before fiction writing started, hiding her phone behind Nick's broad shoulders. Abel broke up with me.
Oh, God, sorry. Want me to come over?
Yeah, at 5.
Yeah, you okay?
Think so.
End tables end.
Have you cried yet? They were sitting on Kath's bed, eating the last of the protein bars.
No, Kath said. I don't think I'm going to.
Ren bit her lip, literally.
Say it, Kath said.
I don't think I have to. I never thought that not saying it would be this satisfying.
Say it.
He wasn't a real boyfriend. You never liked him like that. Ren pushed Kath so hard she fell over. Kath laughed and sat back up, drawing her legs up into her arms.
I really thought I did, though.
How could you think that? Ren was laughing, too. Kath shrugged. It was Thursday night, and Ren was already dressed to go out. She was wearing pale green eyeshadow that made her eyes look more green than blue, and her lips were a shiny red. Her short hair was parted on one side and swept glamorously across her forehead.
Seriously, Ren said, you know what love feels like. I've read you describe it 1,000 different ways.
Kath pulled a face.
That's different. That's fantasy. That's Simon reached out for Baz, and his name felt like a magic word on his lips.
It's not all fantasy, Ren said. Kath thought of Levi's eyes when Reagan teased him. She thought of Nick tapping his short, even teeth with the tip of his tongue.
I can't believe Abel told me this girl's ACT score, she said. What am I supposed to do with that? Offer her a scholarship?
Are you sad at all? Ren reached under the bed and shook an empty protein bar box.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed that I held on for so long. That I really thought we could go on like we were. And I'm sad because it feels like now high school is finally over. Like Abel was this piece of a really happy time that I thought I could take with me.
Do you remember when he bought you a laptop power cord for your birthday?
That was a good gift, Kath said, pointing at her sister.
Ren grabbed her finger and pulled it down.
Did you think of him every time you booted up?
I needed a new power cord. Kath leaned back against the wall again, facing Ren.
He kissed me that day, on our 17th birthday, for the first time.
Or maybe I kissed him.
Was it charged with passion?
Kath giggled.
No. But I remember thinking that he made me feel safe.
She rubbed her head back against the painted cinder blocks.
I remember thinking that me and Abel would never be like Dad and Mom. That if Abel ever got tired of me, I'd survive it.
Ren was still holding on to Kath's hand. She squeezed it, then she laid her head against the wall, mirroring Kath. Kath was crying now.
Well, you did, Ren said. Survive it.
Kath laughed and pushed her fingers up behind her glasses to wipe her eyes. Ren took hold of that hand, too.
You know my stand on this, she said.
Fire and rain, Kath whispered. She felt Ren's fingers circle her wrists.
We're unbreakable.
Kath looked at Ren's smooth brown hair and the glint of steel, the crown of gray that circled the green in her eyes.
You are, she thought.
Does this mean no more tres leches cake on our birthday? Ren asked.
There's something else I want to tell you, Kath said before she could think it through.
I think there's this guy.
Ren raised her eyebrows, but before Kath could say anything more, they heard voices and a key in the door.
Ren let go of Kath's wrists and the door swung open. Reagan barreled in and dropped her duffel bag on the floor. She rushed out again before Levi even made it into the room.
Hey, Kath, he said, already smiling. Are you...
He looked at the bed and stopped.
Levi, Kath said, this is my sister, Ren.
Ren held out her hand. Levi's eyes were as wide as Kath had ever seen them. He grinned at Wren and took her hand, shaking it.
Wren, he said. Such fascinating names in your family.
Our mom didn't know she was having twins, Wren said, and she didn't feel like coming up with another name.
Cather Wren.
Levi looked like he'd just now discovered sliced bread.
Catherine.
Kath rolled her eyes. Wren just smiled. Clever, right?
Kath, Levi said, and tried to sit next to Wren on the bed, even though there wasn't enough room.
Wren laughed and scooted toward Kath. Kath scooted too, reluctantly. If you give Levi an inch...
I didn't know you had a mother, he said. Or a sister. What else are you hiding?
5 cousins, Wren said, and a string of ill-fated hamsters, all named Simon. Levi opened his smile up completely.
Oh, put that away, Kath said with distaste. I don't want you to get charm all over my sister. What if we can't get it out?
Reagan walked back through the open door and glanced over at Kath. She noticed Wren and shuddered.
Is this your twin? You knew about the twin? Levi asked.
Wren, Reagan, Kath said.
Hello, Reagan said, frowning.
Don't take any of this personally, Kath said to Wren. They're both like this with everyone. I have to go anyway. Wren slid cheerfully off the bed. She was wearing a pink dress and brown tights and brown ankle boots with heels and little green buttons up the side. They were Kath's boots, but Kath was never brave enough to wear them.
Nice meeting you, everybody, Wren said, smiling at Reagan and Levi.
See you at lunch tomorrow, she said to Kath. Reagan ignored her. Levi waved. As soon as the door closed, Levi popped his eyes again, bluely.
That's your twin sister?
Identical, Reagan said, like she had a mouthful of hair. Kath nodded and sat down at her desk.
Wow!
Levi scooted down the bed so he was sitting across from her.
I'm not sure what you're getting at, Kath said, but I think it's offensive. How can the fact that your identical twin sister is super hot be offensive to you?
Because, Kath said, still too encouraged by Wren and weirdly by Abel and maybe even by Nick, to let this get to her right now. It makes me feel like the ugly one.
You're not the ugly one.
Levi grinned.
You're just the Clark Kent.
Kath started checking her email.
Hey, Kath, Levi said, kicking her chair. She could hear the teasing in his voice. Will you warn me when you take off your glasses?
Agatha Wellbeloved was the loveliest witch at Watford. Everyone knew it. Every boy, every girl, all the teachers. The bats in the belfry, the snakes in the cellars. Agatha herself knew it, which you might think would detract from her charm and her beauty. But Agatha, at 14, never used this knowledge to harm or hold over others. She knew she was lovely, and she shared it like a gift. Every smile from Agatha was like waking up to a perfect sunny day. Agatha knew it, and she smiled at everyone who crossed her path, as if it were the most generous thing she could offer. From Chapter 15, Simon Snow and the Selkies 4. Copyright 2007, Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 8.
Have you started your scene yet?
They were in the sub-basement of the library, the sub-sub-basement, and it was even colder than usual. The wind was making Nick's bangs flutter over his forehead.
Do guys call them bangs? Kath wondered.
Why is it windy in here? She asked.
Why is it windy anywhere? Nick answered.
That made her laugh.
I don't know. Tides? Caves breathing?
It's not wind at all, Kath said. It's what we feel when time suddenly jolts forward.
Nick smiled at her.
His lips were thin but dark, the same color as the inside of his mouth.
English majors are useless, he said, twitching his eyebrows. Then he elbowed her. So, have you started your scene? You're probably done already. You're so fucking fast.
I get lots of practice, she said.
Writing practice?
Yeah. For a second, she thought about telling him the truth, about Simon and Baz, about a chapter a day and 35,000 hits. I write laps, she said, every morning, just to stay loose.
Have you started your scene?
Yeah, Nick said. He was drawing swirls in the margin of the notebook.
3 times. I'm just not sure about this assignment.
Professor Piper wanted them to write a scene with an untrustworthy narrator. Kath had written hers from Baz's point of view. It was an idea she'd had for a while. She might turn it into a longer fic someday, someday when she was done with Carry On.
This should be cake for you, Kath said, elbowing Nick back more gently. All your narrators are unreliable.
Nick had let her read some of his short stories and the first few chapters of a novel he'd started freshman year. All his stuff was dark, dirtier and grimier than anything Kath would ever write, but still funny, embracing somehow. Nick was good. She liked to sit next to him and watch all that good come out of his hand, watch the jokes spill out in real time, watch the words click together.
Exactly, he said, licking his top lip. He practically didn't have a top lip, just a smear of red. That's why I feel like I need to do something special this time around.
Come on, Kath pulled at the notebook. My turn.
It was always hard to get Nick to give up the notebook. The first night they'd worked on their extracurricular story, Nick had shown up with 3 pages already written.
That's cheating, Kath had said.
It's just the first push, he said, to get us rolling.
She'd taken the notebook and written over and between his words, squeezing new dialogue into the margins and crossing outlines that went too far. Sometimes Nick stretched his style too thin. Then she'd added a few paragraphs of her own. It had gotten easier to write on paper, though Kath still missed her keyboard.
I need to cut and paste, she'd say to Nick. Next time, he'd say, bring scissors.
They sat next to each other now when they worked, the better to read and write during the other's turns. Kath had learned to sit on Nick's right side so that their writing hands didn't bump unintentionally. It made Kath feel like part of a 2-headed monster, a 3-legged race. It made her feel at home. She wasn't sure what Nick was feeling. They talked a lot, before class and during class. Nick would crank around in his chair completely. Sometimes after they got out, Kath would pretend she had to walk past Bessie Hall, where Nick's next class was, even though there was nothing past Bessie Hall but the football stadium. Thank God Nick never asked where she was going. He never asked that when they left the library at night, either. They always stopped for a minute on the steps while Nick put his backpack on and wound his blue paisley scarf around his neck. Then he'd say, "See you in class," and be gone. If Kath knew Levi was in her room, she'd call and wait for him to come get her. But most nights she pressed 911 on her phone, then ran back to the dorm with her finger over the call button. Ren was on some weird diet.
It's the skinny bitch diet, Courtney said.
It's vegan, Ren clarified. It was Fajita Friday at Selleck. Ren had a plate full of grilled green peppers and onions and 2 oranges. She'd been eating like this for a few weeks. Kath looked her over carefully. Ren was wearing clothes that Kath had worn, too, so Kath knew how they usually fit. Ren's sweater was still tight over her chest. Her jeans still rode too low over her ass. She and Ren were both bottom-heavy. Kath liked to wear shirts and sweaters that she could pull down over her hips. Ren liked to wear things she could pull in at the waist.
You look the same, Kath said. You look like me, and look what I'm eating.
Kath was eating beef fajitas with sour cream and 3 kinds of cheese.
Yeah, but you're not drinking.
Is that part of the skinny bitch diet?
We're skinny bitches on weekdays, Courtney said, and drunk bitches on the weekend.
Kath tried to catch Ren's eye. I don't think I'd want to aspire to be any kind of bitch.
Too late, Ren said blandly, then changed the subject.
Did you hang out with Nick last night?
Yeah, Kath said, then smiled. She tried to turn it into a smirk, but that just made her nose twitch like a rabbit's.
Oh, Kath, Courtney said, we were thinking we could just happen to come to the library some night so we can see him. Tuesdays and Thursdays, right?
No. No way. No, no, no. Kath looked at Ren. No. Okay?
Say okay.
Okay. Ren stabbed her fork full of onions. What's the big deal?
It's not a big deal, Kath said. But if you came, it would seem like a big deal. You would destroy my, hey, whatever, you want to hang out, that's cool strategy.
You have a strategy? Ren asked. Does it involve kissing him?
Ren wouldn't leave the kissing thing alone. Ever since Abel had dumped Kath, Ren was on her about chasing her passions and letting loose the beast within.
What about him? She'd say, finding an attractive guy to point out while they were standing in the lunch line. Do you want to kiss him?
I don't want to kiss a stranger, Kath would answer. I'm not interested in lips out of context.
It was only partly true. Ever since Abel had broken up with her, ever since Nick had started sitting next to her, Kath kept noticing things. Boys. Guys. Everywhere. Seriously, everywhere. In her classes, in the union, in the dormitory, on the floors above and below her. And she'd swear they didn't look anything like the boys in high school. How can that one year make such a difference?
Kath found herself watching their necks and their hands. She noticed the heaviness in their jaws, the way their chests buttressed out from their shoulders, their hair. Nick's eyebrows trailed into his hairline, and his sideburns fainted onto his cheeks. When she sat behind him in class, she could see the muscles in his left shoulder sliding under his shirt. Even Levi was a distraction. A near constant distraction, with his long, tan neck and his throat bobbing and cording when he laughed. Kath felt different, tuned in.
Boy, even though none of these guys seemed like boys, crazy. And for once, Ren was the last person she wanted to talk to about it. Everyone was the last person Kath wanted to talk to about it.
My strategy, she said to Ren now, is to make sure he doesn't meet my prettier, skinnier twin.
I don't think it would matter, Ren said. Kath noticed she wasn't arguing the prettier, skinnier point.
It sounds like he's into your brain. I don't have your brain.
She didn't. And Kath didn't understand that at all. They had the same DNA, the same nature, the same nurture. All the differences between them didn't make sense.
Come home with me this weekend, Kath said abruptly. She'd found a ride back to Omaha that night. Ren had already said she didn't want to go.
You know Dad misses us, Kath said. Come on.
Ren looked down at her tray.
I told you, I've got to study.
There's a home game this weekend, Courtney said. We don't have to be sober until Monday at 11.
Have you even called Dad? Kath asked.
We've been emailing, Ren said. He seems fine.
He misses us.
He's supposed to miss us. He's our father.
Yeah, Kath said softly. But he's different.
Ren's face lifted and she glared at Kath, shaking her head just slightly. Kath pushed away from the table.
I better go. I need to run back to my room before class.
When Professor Piper asked for their unreliable narrator papers that afternoon, Nick grabbed Kath's out of her hand. She grabbed it back. He raised an eyebrow. Kath tilted her chin and smiled at him. It was only later that she realized she was giving him one of Ren's smiles, one of her evangelical smiles. Nick pushed his tongue into his cheek and studied Kath for a second before he turned around. Professor Piper took the paper from her hand. "Thank you, Kath." She smiled warmly and squeezed Kath's shoulder. "I can hardly wait." Nick twisted his head back around at that. "Pet," he mouthed. Kath thought about reaching up to the back of his head and petting his hair down to the point at his neck.
It had been 2 hours since they watched the drawbridge lock into the fortress. 2 hours of squabbling about whose fault it had been. Baz would pout and say, "We wouldn't have missed curfew if you hadn't gotten in my way." And Simon would growl and say, "I wouldn't have to get in your way if you weren't wandering the grounds nefariously." But the truth, Simon knew, was that they'd just gotten so caught up in their arguing that they'd lost track of time, and now they'd have to spend the night out here. There was no getting around the curfew, no matter how many times Baz clicked his heels and said, "There's no place like home." That was a 7th-year spell anyway. There was no way Baz could pull it off. Simon sighed and dropped down onto the grass. Baz was still muttering and staring up at the fortress, like he might yet spot a way in. "Oi," Simon said, thumping Baz's knee.
"Ow, what?"
"I've got an aero bar," Simon said. "Want half?" Baz peered down, his long face as grey as his eyes in the gloaming. He flicked his black hair back and frowned, settling down next to Simon on the hill.
"What kind?"
"Mint." Simon dug the candy out from the pocket in his cape.
"That's my favourite,"
Baz admitted, grudgingly. Simon flashed him a wide white grin.
"Mine too."
From Secret Stars and Aero Bars, posted January 2009, by fanfics.net authors Magicath and Renegade.
Chapter 9. Kath had an hour or so to kill before she left for Omaha, and she didn't feel like sitting in her room. It was the best kind of November day, cold and crisp, but not quite freezing, not icy. Just cold enough that she could justifiably wear all her favorite clothes, cardigans and tights and leg warmers. She thought about going to the Union to study, but decided to walk around downtown Lincoln instead. Kath almost never left campus. There wasn't much reason to. Leaving campus felt like crossing the border. What would she do if she lost her wallet or got lost? She'd have to call the embassy. Lincoln felt a lot more like a small town than Omaha. There were still movie theaters downtown and little shops. Kath walked by a Thai restaurant and the famous Chipotle. She stopped to walk through a gift shop and smell all the essential oils. There was a Starbucks across the street. She wondered if it was Levi's Starbucks, and a minute later she was crossing over. Inside, it was exactly like every other Starbucks Kath had ever been to, maybe with a few more professorial types, and with Levi briskly moving behind the espresso machine, smiling at something somebody was saying in his headset. Levi was wearing a black sweater over a white t-shirt. He looked like he'd just gotten a haircut, shorter in the back but still sticking up and flopping all over his face. He called out someone's name and handed a drink to a guy who looked like a retired violin teacher. Levi stopped to talk to the guy, because he was Levi, and this was a biological necessity. "Are you in line?" a woman asked Kath. "No, go ahead." But then Kath decided she may as well get in line. It's not like she'd come here to observe Levi in the wild. She didn't know what she was doing here. "Can I help you?" the guy at the register asked. "No, you cannot," Levi said, pushing the guy down the line. "I got this one." He grinned at her. "Cather." "Hey," Kath said, rolling her eyes. She hadn't thought he'd seen her.
"Look at you, all sweatered up. What are those, leg sweaters?"
"They're leg warmers."
"You're wearing at least 4 different kinds of sweater."
This is a scarf.
You look tarred and sweatered.
I get it, she said.
Did you just stop by to say hi?
No, she said.
He frowned. She rolled her eyes again.
I came for coffee.
What kind?
Just coffee.
Grande coffee. It's cold out. Let me make you something good.
Kath shrugged. Levi grabbed a cup and started pumping syrup into it. She waited on the other side of the espresso machine.
What are you doing tonight? He asked. You should come over. I think we're going to have a bonfire. Reagan's coming.
I'm going home, Kath said. Omaha.
Yeah?
Levi smiled up at her. The machine made a hissing noise.
I bet your parents are happy about that.
Kath shrugged again. Levi heaped whipped cream onto her drink. His hands were long and thicker than the rest of him, a little knobby with short, square nails.
Have a great weekend, he said, handing her the drink.
I haven't paid yet.
Levi held up his hands. Please, you insult me.
What is this?
She leaned over the cup and took a breath. My own concoction, pumpkin mocha breve, light on the mocha. Don't try to order it from anyone else. It'll never turn out the same.
Thanks, Kath said. He grinned at her again, and she took a step backwards into a shelf full of mugs. Bye, she said. Levi moved on to the next person, smiling as wide as ever. Kath's ride was a girl named Erin, who'd put a sign up in the floor bathroom about splitting gas back to Omaha. All she talked about was her boyfriend, who still lived in Omaha, and who was probably cheating on her. Kath couldn't wait to get home. She felt a surge of optimism as she ran up the steps to her house. Somebody had raked the leaves. People who stayed up all night making mountains out of mashed potatoes rarely had the presence of mind for leaf raking. Not that her dad would actually do that, the mashed potato thing. That wasn't his style at all. A fireman's pole to the attic, spur-of-the-moment road trips, staying up for 3 nights because he discovered Battlestar Galactica on Netflix. That was the M.O. to his madness. Dad? The house was dark. He should be home by now. He said he would come home early.
Kath?
He was in the kitchen. She ran forward to hug him. He hugged her back like he needed it. When she pulled away, he smiled at her, sight for sore eyes and everything. It's dark in here, she said. Her dad looked around the room like he'd just got there.
You're right.
He walked around the main floor, flipping on lights. When he started on the lamps, Kath switched them off behind him.
I was just working on something, he said.
For work?
For work, he agreed, absentmindedly turning on a lamp she'd just switched off. How do you feel about gravioli?
I like it. Is that what we're having for dinner?
No, that's the client I'm on.
You guys got gravioli?
Not yet. It's a pitch. How do you feel about it?
About gravioli?
Yeah.
He tapped the middle fingers of his left hand against his palm. I like the gravy. And the ravioli?
And it makes you feel...
full.
That's terrible, Kath.
Happy? Indulgent?
Comforted? Doubly comforted because I'm eating 2 comfort foods at once?
Maybe, he said. It makes me wonder what else would be better with gravy.
Ha, he said. Possible.
He started walking away from her, and she knew he was looking for his sketchbook. What are we having for dinner? Kath asked.
Whatever you want, he said.
Then he stopped and turned to her, like he was remembering something.
No, taco truck. Taco truck?
Yes, I'm driving. I haven't driven in months. Which one should we go to? Let's go to them all.
There are at least 7 taco trucks, just in a 2-mile radius.
Bring it on, she said. I want to eat burritos from now until Sunday morning. They ate their burritos and watched TV. Her dad scribbled and Kath got out her laptop. Ren should be here with her laptop, too, sending Kath instant messages instead of talking. Kath decided to send Ren an email. I wish you were here. Dad looks good. I don't think he's done dishes since we left, or that he's used any dishes other than drinking glasses, but he's working, and nothing is in pieces. And his eyes are in his eyes, you know? Anyway, see you Monday. Be safe. Try not to let anyone roofie you. Kath went to bed at 1 o'clock. She came back down at 3 to make sure the front door was locked. She did that sometimes when she couldn't sleep, when things didn't feel quite right or settled. Her dad had papered the living room with headlines and sketches. He was walking around them now like he was looking for something. Bed? She said. It took a few seconds for his eyes to rest on her. Bed, he answered, smiling gently. When she came back down at 5, he was in his room. She could hear him snoring. Her dad was gone when she came downstairs later that morning. Kath decided to survey the damage. The papers in the living room had been sorted into sections. Buckets, he called them. They were taped to the walls and the windows. Some pieces had other papers taped around them, as if the ideas were exploding. Kath looked over all his ideas and found a green pen to star her favorites. She was green, Ren was red. The sight of it, chaotic but still sorted, made her feel better. A little manic was okay. A little manic paid the bills and got him up in the morning, made him magic when he needed it most. I was magic today, girls, he'd say after a big presentation, and they'd both know that meant Red Lobster for dinner, with their own lobsters and their own candle-warmed dishes of drawn butter. A little manic was what their house ran on, the goblin spinning gold in the basement. Kath checked the kitchen. The fridge was empty. The freezer was full of healthy choice meals and Marie Callender's pot pies. She loaded the dishwasher with dirty glasses, spoons, and coffee cups. The bathroom was fine. Kath peeked into her dad's bedroom and gathered up more glasses. There were papers everywhere in there, not even in piles. Stacks of mail, most of it unopened. She wondered if he'd just swept everything into his room before she got home. She didn't touch anything but the dishes. Then she microwaved a healthy choice meal, ate it over the sink, and decided to go back to bed. Her bed at home was so much softer than she'd ever appreciated, and her pillows smelled so good, and she'd missed all their Simon and Baz posters. There was a full-size cutout of Baz, baring his fangs and smirking, hanging from the rail of Kath's canopy bed. She wondered if Reagan would tolerate it in their dorm room. Maybe it would fit in Kath's closet. She and her dad ate every meal that weekend at a different taco truck. Kath had carnitas and barbacoa, al pastor, and even lengua. She ate everything drenched in green tomatillo sauce. Her dad worked, so Kath worked with him, logging more words on Carry On Simon than she'd written in weeks. On Saturday night, she was still wide awake at 1 o'clock, but she made a big show of going to bed so that her dad would, too. Then she stayed up an hour or two more, writing. It felt good to be writing in her own room, in her own bed, to get lost in the world of mages and stay lost, to not hear any voices in her head but Simon's and Baz's, not even her own. This was why Kath wrote fic. For these hours when their world supplanted the real world, when she could just ride their feelings for each other like a wave, like something falling downhill. By Sunday night, the whole house was covered in onion skin sketch paper and burrito foil. Kath started another load of drinking glasses and gathered up all the delicious-smelling trash. She was supposed to meet her ride out in West Omaha. Her dad was waiting by the door to take her, rattling his car keys against his leg. Kath tried to take a mental picture of him to reassure herself with later. He had light brown hair, just Kath and Ren's color, just their texture, too, thick and straight. a round nose, just wider and longer than theirs. Every/no-color eyes, just like theirs. It was like he'd had them by himself all along. Like the three of them had just split their DNA evenly. It would be a much more reassuring picture if he didn't look so sad. His keys were hitting his leg too hard. "I'm ready," she said.
"Kath."
The way he said it made her heart sink.
"Sit down, okay? There's something I need to tell you real quick."
"Why do I have to sit down? I don't want to have to sit down."
"Just..."
He motioned toward the dining room table.
"Please."
Kath sat at the table, trying not to lean on his papers or breathe them into disorder.
"I didn't mean to save this,"
he said. "Just say it," Kath said. "You're making me nervous." Worse than nervous. Her stomach was twisted up to her trachea.
"I've been talking to your mom."
"What?" Kath would have been less shocked if he'd told her he'd been talking to a ghost or a yeti. "Why? What?"
"Not for me,"
he said quickly, like he knew that the two of them getting back together was a horrifying prospect.
"About you."
"Me?"
"You and Ren."
"Stop," she said. "Don't talk to her about us."
"Kath, she's your mother."
"There is no evidence to support that."
"Just listen, Kath. You don't even know what I'm going to say."
Kath was starting to cry. "I don't care what you're going to say." Her dad decided to just keep talking.
"She'd like to see you. She'd like to know you a little better."
"No."
"Honey, she's been through a lot."
"No," Kath said. "She's been through nothing." It was true. You name it, Kath's mom wasn't there for it. "Why are we talking about her?" Kath could hear her dad's keys banging against his leg again, hitting the bottom of the table. They needed Ren here now. Ren didn't twitch or cry. Ren wouldn't let him keep talking about this.
"She's your mother," he said. "And I think you should give her a chance."
"We did, when we were born. I'm done talking about this." Kath stood up too quickly, and a pile of papers fluttered off the table.
"Maybe we can talk about it more at Thanksgiving," he said.
"Maybe we can not talk about it at Thanksgiving so that we don't ruin Thanksgiving. Are you going to tell Ren?"
"I already did. I sent her an email."
"What did she say?"
"Not much. She said she'd think about it."
"Well, I'm not thinking about it," Kath said. "I can't even think about this." She got up from the table and started gathering her things. She needed something to hang on to. He shouldn't have talked to them about this separately. He shouldn't have talked to them about it at all. The drive to West Omaha with her dad was miserable, and the drive back to Lincoln without him was worse.
Nothing was going right. They'd been attacked by a venomous crested woodfowl, and then they'd hidden in that cave with the spiders and the whatever that thing was that had bitten Simon's tennis shoe, possibly a rat. And then Baz had taken Simon's hand. Or maybe Simon had taken Baz's hand. Anyway, it was totally forgivable, because woodfowl and spiders and rats. And sometimes you held somebody's hand just to prove that you were still alive, and that another human being was there to testify to that fact. They'd walked back to the fortress like that, hand in hand, and it would have been okay. It would have been mostly okay if one of them had just let go. If they hadn't stood there on the edge of the great lawn, holding this little bit of each other, long after the danger had passed. From The Wrong Idea, posted January 2010, by fanfics.net author Magical.
Chapter 10.
Professor Piper wasn't done grading their unreliable narrator scenes, which made Nick crabby and paranoid, but the professor wanted them all to get started on their final project, a 10,000-word short story. "Don't save it till the night before," she said, sitting on her desk and swinging her legs. "It will read like you wrote it the night before. I'm not interested in stream of consciousness." Kath wasn't sure how she was going to keep everything straight in her head. The final project, the weekly writing assignments, on top of all her other classwork for every other class, all the reading, all the writing, the essays, the justifications, the reports, plus Tuesdays and sometimes Thursdays writing with Nick, plus carry on, plus email and notes and comments. Kath felt like she was swimming in words, drowning in them sometimes. "Do you ever feel," she asked Nick Tuesday night, "like you're a black hole? A reverse black hole?"
"Something that blows instead of sucks?"
"Something that sucks out," she tried to explain. She was sitting at their table in the stacks with her head resting on her backpack. She could feel the indoor wind on her neck. "A reverse black hole of words."
"So the world is sucking you dry," he said, "of language."
"Not dry, not yet. But the words are flying out of me so fast, I don't know where they're coming from."
"And maybe you've run through your surplus," he said gravely, "and now they're made of bone and blood."
"Now they're made of breath," she said. Nick looked down at her, his eyebrows pulled together in one thick stripe. His eyes were that color you can't see in the rainbow, indigo.
"Nope," he said. "I never feel like that."
She laughed and shook her head.
"The words come out of me like Spider-Man's webbing."
Nick held out his hands and touched his middle fingers to his palms. Kath tried to laugh, but yawned instead.
"Come on," he said. "It's midnight."
She gathered up her books. Nick always took the notebook. It was his notebook, after all, and he worked on the story between library dates, or meetings, or whatever these were. When they got outside, it was much colder than Kath was expecting.
"See you tomorrow," Nick said as he walked away. "Maybe Piper'll have our papers done."
Kath nodded and got out her phone to call her room. "Hey," someone said softly. She jumped back. It was just Levi, leaning against the lamppost, like the archetypical man leaning against lamppost.
"You're always done at midnight," he smiled. "I thought I'd beat you to the punch. Too cold out here to stand around waiting."
"Thanks," she said, walking past him toward the dorms. Levi was uncharacteristically quiet.
"So that's your study partner?" he asked once they were halfway back to Pound.
"Yeah," Kath said into her scarf. She felt her breath, wet and freezing in the wool.
"Do you know him?"
"Seen him around." Kath was quiet. It was too cold to talk, and she was more tired than usual.
"He ever offer to walk you home?"
"I've never asked," Kath said quickly. "I've never asked you either."
"That's true," Levi said.
More quiet. More cold. The air stung Kath's throat when she finally spoke again. "So maybe you shouldn't."
"Don't be ridiculous," Levi said. "That wasn't my point."
The first time she saw Ren that week, at lunch with Courtney, all Kath could think was, "So this is what you look like when you're keeping a giant secret from me. Exactly the same as usual." Kath wondered if Ren was ever planning to talk to her about what their dad had brought up. She wondered how many other important things Ren wasn't telling her. And when had this started? When had Ren started filtering what she told Kath? "I can do that too," Kath thought. "I can keep secrets." But Kath didn't have any secrets, and she didn't want to keep anything from Ren. Not when it felt so good, so easy to know that when she was with Ren, she didn't have to worry about a filter. She kept waiting for a chance to talk to Ren without Courtney, but Courtney was always around,
and always talking about the most inane things possible, like her life was an audition for an MTV reality show. Finally, after a few days, Kath decided to walk to class with Ren after lunch, even though it might make her late. "What's up?" Ren asked as soon as Courtney was on her merry way to economics. It had started snowing, a wet snow. "You know I went home last weekend," Kath said. "Yeah, how's Dad?" "Fine. Good, actually. He's pitching gravioli." "Gravioli? That's huge." "I know, and he seemed into it, and there was nothing else. I mean, everything seemed fine." "I told you he didn't need us," Ren said. Kath snorted. "He obviously needs us. If he had a cat, the man would be one bad day away from Grey Gardens. I think he eats all of his meals at Quick Trip, and he's sleeping on the couch." "I thought you said he was doing good." "Well,